This week on Barbell Struggle, we interview Greg and Amy Everett of Catalyst Athletics.
Hey, this is Rich Froning. You're listening to Barbell Shrugged. For the video version, go to barbellshrugged.com.
Welcome to Barbell Shrugged. I'm Mike Bletzer here with Doug Larson and Chris Moore, hanging out in Sunnyvale, California, with Amy Everett. If you're not familiar with what she does, she's a weightlifting coach and athlete at Catalyst Athletics. Mm-hmm. Can you give us a... Oh, wait. Before we get into Amy's biography...
You almost skipped
hold
it.
That thought, almost. Hold that thought.
Make sure to go to barbellstroke.com. Sign up for the newsletter. Doing cool stuff all the time. We're not going to talk about it here, but we'll email you. So sign up for that. All right. So what... So Amy, can you tell us a little bit about yourself? How did you get into weightlifting? And what brought you to this point in your life, right now, standing here with us?
Now, here today?
That's right.
Well, when I was young, I'm like almost 100 in weightlifting years, so really long time ago, I was playing volleyball, and my then club volleyball coach sent me to this guy, you may know him, his name's Mike Bergner.
Oh,
do you know who he is?
Yeah,
he's so famous.
Knows Mike.
I know, he's like Jay-Z famous now, like really famous, but he,
like cowboy hat,
he's up there.
I know, he, so I met him when I was just a girl, 19, a long time ago, and I, you know, weightlifting wasn't how it is today with like all these coaches and, you know, the popularity of it that CrossFit has brought and stuff. And so he just looked at me and said, "Hey, see that, what that guy's doing right there? That's what I want you to
cool?
do. That's what you have to do." That's how I learned. And I never in my entire life lifted a weight. I played 3 varsity sports in high school all 4 years, but we didn't never went to a weight room. And so I was like, wow, this is kind of cool. So I turned down volleyball and I started weightlifting.
Turned down?
Well, you weren't built for volleyball anyway.
Well, I have a really good vertical jump. So it's like a, wow, look at this short little girl. And then whoosh, out of nowhere, here I go, jumping in, bam.
Wait, you have a good vertical jump now or you did then too?
Well, I did then. But
is that from weightlifting?
No, I've always had hops.
Oh, word.
Yeah. And actually funny about that is I just was at my cousin's house last weekend and she had a picture from her wedding when I was only, I think, 17. And I was catching the bouquet and my feet were like at everybody's waist. And I was catching the bouquet like far above everybody. My elbows were like in their face.
Didn't stand a chance.
Yeah, I have it on my phone. I sent it to Greg. I was like, look. So that's how I was able to play volleyball because I am short.
We didn't even mention Greg yet.
Greg, come on.
Oh, Greg's my husband. Anaya Everett.
Yeah, we came.
Oh, I see what you did. So did you turn, on this level, was this turning down a chance to play?
Yeah, I was going to play volleyball for college.
Wow.
And I decided, you know, I don't really want to go to college.
Did you say, you know what, fuck this, you know?
I was like, fuck this shit.
Yes.
I'm going to stay here with Coach Bergner and I'm going to do this barbell shit. And so I did. And I think like 2 months later, I qualified for junior nationals.
Found your fucking passion, didn't you?
I did. And then that's it. That's what I did. I lifted for a long time.
Bless your heart.
How old are you now? I mean, am I allowed to ask that?
I just celebrated the 6th reunion of my 30th birthday.
It sounds like a lot of math. We're thinking,
Yeah.
Nice.
So I lifted and then I took a break. I took 5 years off. I got knocked up. I went to college and got a couple master's degrees and...
Oh, snap.
Yeah, and then I started lifting again. And I came back much wiser and stronger and more mature. And
what are the degrees in?
Human behavior psychology.
Oh, shit. We're dealing with one of you types now.
Yeah. I'm a crazy
lot.
Person.
if you follow her on Twitter, it just makes sense.
It doesn't make sense now?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's why my Twitter handle is called Amy's 2 Cents with a number 2. AIMEE, number 2, cents. I have something to say about everything.
I'm going to look you up right now. I'm going to follow you.
Ah,
and I want to
yes.
see what your 2 cents are.
I'm like 990,000 people away from 1 million followers. I'm super close.
Doing good. Yeah.
Did I just leave you speechless?
That happens so few times.
Not very often. No.
So how'd you meet Greg?
Coach Bergner. I had actually met him like two or three times before I actually realized I was meeting him. I kind of sail through life not paying a whole lot of attention to people. Like, I'm always the one that's like, hi, nice to meet you, as they're saying, nice to see you again. Like, fuck. I just blew it.
I studied how to do this better in psychology.
Yeah, I'm really
bad at that. So y'all had met several times, and then...
Yes, I did.
So he had met you several times, but eventually right. You met him.
Eventually, well, he had started emailing me to help me. At that time, I was trying to be, like, little weightlifter. And Coach Bergner says, you have to email Greg Everett, and, you know, he'll help you with your diet and stuff. And so he started emailing me. I'm like, who is this Greg Everett guy?
And who's this jerk?
Yeah, and then I had to, I found out that I had met him a couple times, so I had to Google him and try to find his picture to see, like, who he was.
And you say, oh, he's handsome.
He'd been coaching for a while.
No. At the time, he lived in Chico, and I lived in Southern California. And he just fell madly in love with me over the internet. And then
he's in his office going, okay, that's not how that happened.
He moved down to Bonzel, to where Coach Bergner is. And he came down there to learn from him, but also to be with me, of course. Mm-hmm.
That's probably the main reason.
That was like 8 years ago. And then, you know, at the time I was still finishing up my master's degree in forensics, and I was, at the time I was gonna work for the FBI. That was like my whole future, to be a profiler.
Did you watch a lot of CSI?
No, I never did, but you know, the funny thing, I did my thesis on the CSI effect.
What's that?
Well, let me tell you what that is. That's like when fools like y'all
we're not going to talk about weightlifting here.
When you watch NCIS or CSI or whatever, mm-hmm. and you think, wow, look at all this stuff they do in an hour.
It's so cool.
And then you become a juror, and you know, it really messes up the system now, because people are like, well, what do you mean you don't have his fingerprints in an hour? You know, and it just,
that's right.
It like messes up what murderers and shit. And so that's why
every case has DNA evidence.
But I never watched it before.
And they pay for it every time.
Yeah. Like you plug in your fingerprint and then like in 2 minutes, you know, you have the whole history of the guy. It's just kind of not real life.
If you haven't broken a law and been arrested before, your fingerprints aren't on file anyway.
Have you all got the new iPhone? Because it has a fingerprint scanner, and now the FBI is going to have all of our fingerprints.
Well,
seriously,
I was in the military, so they already had my fingerprints.
Okay.
No.
And been arrested.
You're probably already on all the lists.
He blames it on the military, though.
I'm on a lot of lists.
You're on a lot of lists right now. The NSA is like tired of you.
Yeah, they.
That's why the TSA always searches your bag.
Yeah,
never
not,
ours.
They're not. They're not even like tracking me anymore. They're just like, we'll just fuck with them as much as possible. Like, we're not going to really pinpoint any specific thing. Not anymore. You're probably in the same boat with your Twitter account.
I think
NSA's
so.
NSA's all over you.
Yeah, they probably sit there and laugh hysterically, but they wait for me to tweet about something important, like a bomb threat or something, you know? So, but.
Well, our show just got flagged.
Never tweet bomb. Bomb, 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 bomb.
Anyway, so I was going to school to be the FBI, and now I'm just a really educated fucking gym owner. Awesome.
So at what point were you part of the process of opening up Catalyst Athletics, or did Greg already have that kind
of
the ball
so,
rolling?
No, what had happened was he had...
That's how lives start.
He had moved down to San Diego from Chico. I'm sorry, I'm getting over something. And at the time, he owned the gym with Rob Wolf, which was the fourth ever CrossFit affiliate in the history of the world, the wow. original CrossFit NorCal. And he moved down there. Well, he ended up selling out his share of the gym. So he kind of took the performance menu. Rob and Nikki kept the gym. And then we kind of, you know, he kind of developed Catalyst Athletics as like a training business and stuff. And then we just kind of took that further. And at the time we were training out, you know, coaching people. Well, I had my real job, and then I was coaching people out of Coach Bergner's gym. And it just kind of, we just realized, you know, taking with him writing the books and doing all the other stuff that we wanted to do, we needed our own space.
So the performance menu stuff, it was just selling subscriptions to that online.
And right.
That
we did like all of that in our living room.
Okay.
Yeah. And you know, that was the business at that time. We did some training, but it was mainly like the online presence that we were trying to develop.
So I didn't realize you guys were doing performance menu before Catalyst Athletics.
Yes, we were. The performance menu's been around longer, you know, because he and Rob had started that long time ago. And we just, it's kind of like, you know, with anything, you need your own space, you need your own office. We were outgrowing our living room. We were shipping everything from our dining room.
There's no separation between work and everything else.
Exactly.
In your life.
You know, we would be watching Burn Notice, and when a commercial came on, we'd like run into the office and answer emails. And so,
y'all gotta talk to Jason Kalipa.
Does he like Burn Notice?
No. Oh. Just watch the episode.
Okay. Yeah. So we decided we wanted to open our own gym so Greg could have like a lab, so to speak.
Right.
And I didn't want to live down there anymore. And we had been coming up here because he was born here. His dad still lives in the same house he was lived in his whole life. And so I was like, I want to move up there and let's go. And we moved like a month later and opened the gym.
So you guys have the performance menu, you got tons of content online, videos and articles, and then you got books and DVDs, and you guys have, you know, pictures
full of freaking awesome. It's not even funny.
It's overflowing.
Yeah,
it's
you guys got a lot going on. Like, how involved are you in creating all that content? What side of that do you handle?
Greg is like the mastermind behind everything. We finally have someone that's like in control of the performance menu, doing the editing and finding contributors for us and stuff. I handle like all the business part of the gym and the business. Greg really handles all of the online presence stuff. You know, he does the website from scratch. I don't know if any of you know this, but we don't have a web guy. Like, Greg is the web guy. He built that website, which is like one of the most amazing sites. We get, you know, endless emails wanting to know who our web guy is. It's Greg. He coded that all himself. He does all of that content himself.
Self-taught, or is that a thing he studied?
It's self-taught. He just learns, and you know, he just gets it. And I think that he's such a perfectionist that he won't allow anybody to come in and take over. Rob's always like, you guys need to hire people to take this stuff over, but you know, he wants it done his way. It's just like the movie that's coming that I think he'll talk about. He's doing it all himself. He did all the filming himself, all the editing himself.
Damn.
All in there on his Mac, just doing it, just it all by himself.
Sounds like he's working too hard.
He does. Works a lot. He's amazing.
Damn.
Which, you know, it's, I've been able, we have like an administrative assistant who also coaches here, but we've kind of turned her into like our administrative assistant who does a lot of the, you know, tedious stuff that needs to get done, or like the grunt work.
She's like, I came here because I'm really excited to coach and like work with athletes. Cool. You want to come over here for these files we got to stack and shit?
Seriously.
I think it'd be great.
You know what? You want to go get my lunch? I do send her to get my lunch a lot, but I always buy hers too. But we've actually taught her now to do the layout of the performance menu. So Greg or I don't have to do it. So we've tried to free up a lot of time, which is good, because then you know, we can step away from the gym and not worry that everything's going to crumble.
I want to talk about weightlifting.
Okay.
Enough of this business stuff.
Yeah, business shit, man. Let's all retire. I want to retire so bad.
So from business or from weightlifting?
Both.
I just want to stop doing anything. What's your biggest accomplishments?
Accomplishments.
As an athlete.
Besides that righteous catching of the thing at the wedding when you were 17.
That was probably the best thing I've ever done. You know, I hate to talk about myself as an athlete because I'm very humble about it. Like, I don't
get your horn out and toot it.
I don't feel like I have been as revolutionary in the sport as I could have been, and I feel that there's much other females in this country that are more deserving. I'm kind of like always a bridesmaid, never a bride. You know, I've always been like the alternate on the world team, but but never on the world team. Or if I'm on the world team, like, I kind of have this like self-sabotaging thing about me. You know, like last year or in 2011 for Worlds, for Paris, I was like, oh, I have a terrible phobia of flying. And so
you have to fly there.
The thought
take a
of
ship, I
yeah,
guess,
the boat, man, that's the way to go.
Oh my God, the thought of flying to Paris was giving me major anxiety attacks, and so I just like I had to just say I can't go. I'm not ready. I'm out of shape and I'm hurting, which was really a big lie. I just did. Well, now it's not going to be a lie. It's just I couldn't get on a fucking plane.
It's all in the open now.
That's a thing to tell your friends, like, oh, I could have totally went to like the Olympics, man, but like I don't dig airports, homie.
Oh God, you know it's
too many
really fucking shitty, but it's the truth. Like,
so what's so terrifying about flying? I mean, I don't like it either.
I mean, it's like you're up like in the air and you can like look like plummet to your death. You have probably a drunk like pilot flying
probably.
You
more than likely,
you know, and it scares the shit out of me. Like literally my biggest phobia is having diarrhea on a plane because you know you're gonna
well,
have
fuck,
to
I can understand that.
You're gonna have to get up and go to the bathroom every 2 seconds. Everyone's gonna be like, she has diarrhea.
And explosive shit all over that aluminum pseudo toilet.
A legit fear.
It won't go away and then you're gonna leave and then it's all over there forever.
And then what if you're hitting turbulence and you can't get out of your plane and you're like squeezing your butt together? Like that's a huge problem
well,
for me.
If you lose pressure in the cabin and all this diarrhea starts floating up in your face and you can't escape.
Oh my God.
I mean, shit is this amazing. It could go so
this
bad.
This shit is bananas.
This shit, yeah.
Okay, so you've been an alternate on the world team.
Several times. You know, I have lived at...
this is great.
I have lived at the training center. I've been ranked... When I'm competitive, when I compete, I'm always ranked in the top 10 of the United States. I'm a national champion.
What year was that?
Oh, it's been a while, dude. I mean, damn.
That was like 1972. And
as soon as I said it, I was like, oh, she's not going to like that
a
question.
A few years ago, yeah.
What were your best lifts?
My best snatch is 93 kilos, and my best clean and jerk is 111 kilos.
Nice.
I've cleaned 112 and I've jerked 118, but together I've only done 111 in competition.
Putting it together is tough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's the important bit in life and on the platform. You gotta put it together.
Yeah, how do you do that, right? So I'm only.
As a coach, what's, you know, your proudest accomplishment, I guess?
I think that building what we have here is amazing and one of my proudest accomplishments. I think that I really wanted to take what I had from back home at Coach Bergner's. You know, he's like a father to me. He walked me down the wedding.
This is Coach,
I mean,
here, right?
The aisle in the wedding.
Oh,
yes.
Really?
That picture's awesome.
That's from a long time ago.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
That's when he was like a youngin. Yeah.
You got a handsome jawline. great elbow position.
It's a great rack. and it was a family, and I really wanted to create that here. I wanted people to have a place to come where they felt at home and they felt like they were loved and that they had something bigger than themselves. And that's what I wanted to accomplish here. And I think that we're in that spot. We have a great team, a lot of girls. We all have our periods at the same time now, which, you know.
Awesome.
It's so fucking awesome. You know, we're all like bitchy and Greg's like, oh God, kill me now. But that's what I wanted to
great
do.
Great for you, terrible for Greg.
How does that affect the periodization plan?
Seriously.
Okay, this
well,
time
yeah,
of month,
exactly.
I'm fucking leaving. That's my periodization plan.
Everyone's in here crying and
all
shit.
Week, I'm going away.
Sometimes you have to do that. It's really, really true.
But I love, I mean, really, I do honestly love, no bullshitting, no jokes, to see a big group of young, aspiring women training together, treating it with respect, knowing it's not going to make them freaks, that it's actually going to empower them and make them more capable of getting out in the world and fucking kicking ass. That is a
right.
fucking great thing to see.
And yeah, it is. And I think that we are the only women's team in this country that all trains together. Coffee's Gym, East Coast Gold, these other women's teams that are amazing, they have amazing athletes, but they don't train together. They're, you know, they're recruited by the coaches and but we're the only team that trains together. Every single day we cry together.
It's essential.
We cuss together. We sing Britney together. We talk about penises together. Like, it's the only... We're here. And we're a family. And we love each other. And... I think it's amazing. It takes a sport bigger than just you, because like when I come in and I'm having a really shitty day, I can look over at Kara and be like, oh my God, she's fucking killing it. And you live vicariously through your teammates. And I think that, like, as you asked, that's my proudest accomplishment, is to come into this gym and look at these people here and know that they want to be here and that they're a part of something, and like this is their second home.
God damn.
That's awesome.
Hey, there you go.
I'm speechless again. Yeah,
it's fantastic.
I mean, basically, you started a cult here. That's
Am I so good at this?
You're doing. You're rocking it. You're rocking. You need your own podcast.
I don't even know why you have so many Twitter followers.
I know, right?
You should Vine. You should Vine.
Do you do Vine?
No, I just started Instagram.
Oh, all right. We're gonna go. I'm gonna give you a Vine tutorial before we leave. Okay.
Okay. What super, is that? Do I get? Cool. Can I? Can I capture like little videos?
Yes.
I'm not
can
a selfie
you capture
person
little
though.
Videos?
I'm not a selfie person. I'm not like one of the duck lip, like pushing the boob out selfies all day long.
No, it could be. We could. I wasn't a selfie guy until Vine came around either.
Really?
So, but now selfies, at least every other video.
I think it's kind of irritating. Like people take selfies of them, especially when they're like all wet and they're like laying out by the pool.
Well, I like that.
And they're taking a selfie of themselves.
What are you talking about?
It's like at least put a fucking crab
follow
in the
people
picture.
You're following. Who are these people you're following? I don't know what you're talking about.
Judge them.
right.
Well, I guess okay.
My Instagram feed is boring.
If
it sounds like you got an awesome.
If
one.
It's like super heavies next to the pool, men, hairy men, weightlifters doing that, I don't want to be a part
no,
of that.
No, it's like when it's like the attention whores, right? They want like everybody to be like, oh, you're so hot. Look at your boobs. Oh my God.
I hate it when hot chicks put their boobs on Instagram. Yeah, it's terrible.
Have some respect, ladies. Have some self decency and restraint.
It's like at least if you're on the beach, like taking a picture of your wet tits, like at least be laying next to a crab or something so that you could be like, look at this crab.
There's context to this picture,
exactly.
Right?
So rather than it's like blatantly look at my tits, you're like, oh, look at the crab I just saw on the beach.
I have nothing to disagree with. That's
That way can be comical and sensual at the same time.
I do that play with my wife. I look at a picture with hot tits, I go, wife, look at this crab. Can you believe that species is indigenous to the beach? I didn't fucking realize that.
And then you men looking at the pictures could have a reason to be looking at it. Like, wow, look at that surf. It's like,
look at the sunset.
So good
the sunset
today.
Is so jiggly.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Enough of that. Sorry, ladies.
All right, I think that's a good place to
take a pause.
Yeah. Take a break, and when we come back, we're gonna have Greg Everett on.
Thank you all so much for having
me.
Us.
We had a blast.
Thanks, okay, thank you.
And we're back.
Yeah.
We're hanging out at Catalyst Athletics here in Sunnyvale, California.
It's a beautiful place.
We kicked Amy off the microphone. We brought Greg in. Old Greg Everett. You probably know him. If you don't, you should. You should go to catalystathletics.com. Check it out. Performance menu. And I'll let you promote the rest of your stuff. How did you get into weightlifting, Greg?
Oh, man. I learned the lifts when I was in high school. But the problem was, my high school weight room was like a universal machine, two benches, and a power rack with the pins so bent that you couldn't get them out.
Did you have an old school hip sled? The old, what's that thing called? The 45 degree, like if you got on that thing and everybody would load up like four plates and it was so, had a weird like wrenching mechanism in there. Those old high school gyms are so fucking terrible, man.
We did have the cable stack machine attached to the wall so you could do the
exercise
and get stuck in it like the kid in Dodgeball. That's about all we had. So, I had nowhere to go. I trained at, Gold's Gym in Mountain View while I was in high school. You know, I was the one of the five people who was there at, 6 in the morning every day with the goofball with his belt, the Walkman tucked inside it, and all that kind of stuff. Man. So
the CD skipped now. When you went to the Discman, it was pretty tough.
There you are at 5 o'clock in the morning, your Zubaz and your Doc Martin shoes, and you're like, God, it's early in the morning to squat, but I'm going to squat.
It was the same guy, though, who had the Walkman inside his belt, whose little wife, like this big, would hand him his dumbbells for all his bench presses and stuff. Come on, man. Like, you're killing me here. This is why you come at this time of the day, right? I kind of got by with what I could and training in Gold's Gym, of course. They did have a lot of power racks. I will say that was nice. But, of course, no really place to do the lifts. And then when I moved to Chico to go to my third and final college, I met Rob Wolf because my neighbor got me to do a website for the BJJ studio owner that Rob was sharing space with. So he had just moved from Seattle, where he started the first CrossFit affiliate with Nick Nibbler and Dave Werner, which they're still up there. They each have their own places now. But And so finally now I had space where we had, you know, big open rubber area and bumpers and bars that spun. It was like, oh, now I can actually do something with this. So that kind of not just rekindled my interest in it, but it gave me an opportunity. Mm-hmm. And then, so let's see, after a couple years there, I had met Mike Bergner. I had met Amy. I'm sure she told you about how she ignored me for the
she
first
said she thought you were so ugly when she first met you.
Yeah.
Like, who's this asshole hitting
that,
on
that
me?
Hasn't changed.
Okay.
It's all wit and charm. So it's all wit and charm, except she didn't pay attention to me, so she couldn't get any of that.
Amy. Oh, Amy, come on. God.
But now I got her legally. She's mine. But so, you know, after a couple years, you know, I decided to move down to train with Mike Bergner full time because I figured, hey, I'm not getting any younger. I want this opportunity. I'm at a point in my life where I'm relatively young and unattached. So say, so, hey, why not? So I went down
there.
You were
all self-taught until then?
Yeah. So
what year was that? Were you able to learn online at all?
No, there was nothing online at that point.
Yeah. There were no internet.
The only thing online at that point about weightlifting was pretty much Mike Bergner's website, which at that time was like a Microsoft Word document with like three pictures of the Rocky Mountains.
Damn.
That was it. So the site that Bergner has now is the one that I built for him a number of years back.
Oh, wow.
So yeah, self-taught until that point. And then so that was 2006. I believe, I think early 2006, and then we were down there. I think I heard Amy telling you we came up here in the end of 2008 and opened this place. So it was a good couple of years to actually like get into it.
Yeah. Well, this place is fantastic,
that's
man.
About when I started following you guys.
Yeah.
So probably I didn't realize I was like following you guys pretty close to the beginning, I guess.
Early adopter.
Yeah.
Good job.
Yeah, thanks. Now I don't pay any attention to your website.
I don't either.
I'm just kidding.
I haven't in months, actually. Working on this this movie, it's just my head's so far up the ass of this movie. I haven't even looked. I haven't written an article in like 6 months, probably.
So you guys have a documentary coming out on weightlifting. Has there been a weightlifting documentary been done before?
Not to my knowledge. That someone made a movie that was about Cheryl Hayworth, and so there was obviously a lot about weightlifting, but it wasn't about weightlifting specifically. It was more about kind of Cheryl, and it was about
the character piece, right?
You know, like body image and stuff like that. It was a really good movie. It was really cool. I liked watching it, but it wasn't about the sport itself. Mm-hmm. And of course, it's focused on one person, so you don't get a lot of a breadth in there. So. This movie hopefully is going to be, you know, it's a little bit of history, but primarily it's about kind of the current state of the sport in this country, which of course, as everyone knows, is struggling to say the least, although it has picked up.
I'm feeling really optimistic about it the last year or so. I'm like, fuck, man, we have now. Because I was lucky enough to be sort of introduced to weightlifting. Maybe like 1999, when I got out of fucking football, or 2000, then joined the lab at the University of Memphis and got going with, you know, Dr. Schilling, Dr. Chu, and all those guys, getting exposed to Stone and Garhammer's work and all that. And it was not good then. And this last year, I'm like, we have now really impressive up and coming lifters, like guys like Kendrick, who are as strong as anybody, and it's starting to click and come together. Guys like Jared and.
It's the young guys that...
Man, that's exciting.
And the young girls. We have a lot of junior lifters right now who are just bawling. Like, they're in a good place. We have Zygmunt Smallschutz out at the Olympic Training Center in Colorado Springs. He's a former Olympian. He was a Polish national coach.
Mm-hmm. He's badass.
And now he's been there since, I think, 2008. So now he's had that time to make the adjustment to the different environment and to the different athletes. Because it's a... totally different story, right, in a number of ways. And so now I think he's really gotten it dialed in, and his lifters are just fucking doing
and
really
Donovan.
Well.
And Donovan. God
yeah, you got
damn,
Donovan, D'Angelo
beast.
Osorio, Choma Amici, Jenny Arthur, you know, Jared Fleming, all these guys who are just doing a really good job.
I don't know, man. I like our chances in the next, like, 5 to 10 years. I really do. I'm feeling really fucking good about it. I will support my local weightlifter.
You guys have any big,
I agree.
You guys have any big up-and-comers coming out of your gym right now?
We definitely have, we've got some up-and-comers. Our problem is that our weightlifters are all too old. You know what I mean? The weightlifting is one of those sports.
What
like
is
a lot
too
of
old?
You.
That's right. Too old.
I can't. And me and Doug.
I've managed to train about 3 months of this year so far, and it's September, so.
There you go. Perfect.
Yeah, but what do you think too old is, like, to be, well, to really pursue it?
to enjoy the sport and to do fairly well and to have fun, there isn't a too old. To become a world champion, a world level competitor, basically anything after like 14 years old is too old. And that's just the reality. I mean, you look at the best athletes in the world in any sport, they have that foundation. They were started young. That doesn't mean you're definitely or you're necessarily starting in weightlifting at a high level at that age, but you are kind of being channeled in that direction. You know, you're being guided and being developed in the long term. And so we have, most of our athletes are, you know, they're leftovers from other sports.
Right.
Like they were football players or they were wrestlers or volleyball players or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it's not even so much that they chose weightlifting, like, hey, I don't want to play the sport anymore. I want to be a weightlifter. It was more like, I got too many concussions to play football anymore. Now what am I going to do? And so that's fine. It's, you know, a lot of concussions is probably good for weightlifting because then you don't know that you can't lift that weight, right? You
just not smart like, enough to like not get under the bar.
I got a dumb strong kid. He's great.
So think about this pull.
He's got a big forehead. I think he'll do fine.
Yeah.
Brow ridge.
But we've got probably our front runner right now is a girl named Tamara Solari. Who's our super heavyweight. She actually came in third at the Nationals in July.
Cleaned 130.
She just cleaned 130 yesterday. Jeez. So, and that's what 286 in the Imperial measurement. So yeah, she's kicking ass.
Now what's her age?
27. So that's what I'm saying. If she was 20, I'd be talking.
It sucks so much, man.
Is she gonna listen to this and get mad at you now?
She won't get mad. It's not my fault. She's 27.
This is.
It's not my fault.
Drake doesn't care.
Well, you know, it's the reality is that you work with what you've got, right?
Yeah.
And in this country, we. Like I said, we get who comes to us. I can't go to a sixth grade PE class with my clipboard and be like, all right, I need you guys to line up. We're going to do a bunch of like leaps and bounds and, you know, whatever. I'm going to like, you know, feel your quad. Like that's creepy. You know, we can't do that. And so we have to rely on people, finding the sport on their own essentially because there's not a whole lot of exposure. It's not like you could turn on ESPN and you're like, oh, CrossFit Games followed by weightlifting. It's like, no, if you see Snatch and Clean and Jerk, it's CrossFit. And that's a good start. It's a really good start.
It's better than before.
It's made a huge impact. It's made a huge difference, but we need more exposure of the sport of weightlifting itself.
Do you think this is the path that CrossFit, for whatever good and bad, will provide the exposure to young kids and they will see, oh, that's pretty cool if I also compete in that? I mean,
oh, absolutely.
Like a guy like me, like I was long since too beat up to ever consider racking a bar, but by the time I was fucking a senior in high school, that window was shut down. But my son has whatever talent my wife and I ever started with. He's already doing ring work. He's already trying to pick up my barbell when I'm doing deadlifts and stuff in the gym. Is cute as shit. Of course, it's cute as shit. But I can now tell him, hey,
boys
look,
too.
Like I can make sure that he's
just wait.
I can make sure he does. Age. I can make sure he knows what it is like to have a good overhead position, a good rack position before he learns how to not be flexible in the arms, before he starts benching fucking 6 days a week like I did when I was in high school. All that stuff.
Well, I mean, that's what it's going to do. A lot of people have gotten overly excited about CrossFit's impact on weightlifting. They misunderstand it. Mm-hmm. It's bringing more money into the sport indirectly because a lot of coaches and weightlifters can now coach and give seminars and, you know, write articles and do all these things that allow them to stay more connected to the sport and not have real jobs.
Yeah.
You know, it's, I credit CrossFit with allowing me to have this business. You know, that's probably 90% of our audience. So I'm very grateful for that. But really what it's going to do is the kids, like you said, who are growing up seeing their parents snatch and clean and jerk, seeing their older brothers and sisters. Mm-hmm. And so it's not so fucking strange. You know what I mean? Like, it's not this oddball sport anymore. It's this thing like, oh, yeah, and my dad did that when I was a kid.
I want Max to go to school, like an elementary school. Like, what, you assholes don't do front squats? I thought everybody did front squats and pools and stuff.
Yeah.
What is this?
Well,
what is this place?
Right. That's the thing. Is every kid, every high school, every junior high, every elementary school, they got a track team, they got a basketball team, you know, football, soccer, all these things. That's normal. And so, you know, weightlifting's never going to be football. That's just a pipe dream at best.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it, you can get it into more schools. You know, look at the Doherty brothers, Kevin and Paul Doherty. They're each high school PE teachers. They have huge weightlifting programs. That's where Donovan Ford came from. That's where Choma Michi came from. That's where D'Angelo Osorio came from. They find all these amazing lifters because they have this great program where they can funnel 300 kids a year through it. Mm-hmm. You know, if you have 300 kids and you can't find a couple good ones, you're doing something horribly wrong. And so imagine that if not every high school in the country, but if 10 high schools in every state in this country had 300 kids a year going through it. Think of how many potential weightlifters.
Well, it probably is in many respects. I mean, these kids have good economic and social support systems largely across this country. Of the millions of potential young athletes like in China or Russia, I have to think that on a little bit smaller scale, we have a similar good chance with all the resource at our disposal in this nation.
Oh, we're a big country compared to a lot of European countries.
Thing with weightlifting, though, is there are two quotes actually from the movie that are perfect. Jim Schmitz said, you know, speaking about China specifically, but a lot of these countries, is weightlifting's a meal ticket. Okay, you know, Chinese lifter, Armenian lifter, whatever, you can get a good job, get an education by being a weightlifter. Here, people give up those things to become a weightlifter. You got to put off school. You got to put off a career because you're struggling to pay bills to train full time, to train twice a day, 6 days a week.
Yeah.
And, you know, now I forget what the other thing I was going to say was. I think it was Bob Takano. It's the reality is that the U.S. is not really good at things that don't make money. Right. So we're really good at swimming. We're good at track and field. We're good at football.
Basketball,
because those are
shit.
Fucking huge money makers, right? Look at the endorsement deals these guys get. Not only do they get the salaries from the teams, but they're getting millions of dollars a year for wearing shoes, right? Our best weightlifters get a couple hundred bucks a month from the USOC.
God, fucking shit.
That's it.
That's shameful, man.
Yeah. Like the best thing I can do for my lifters, we can't pay them. Sometimes we can help with travel a little bit. Yeah. You know, I've gotten them a protein sponsorship from Heavy Athletics Nutrition. They've been great. Pure Farmer sponsors them. We get fish oil and stuff like that. But that's pretty much
good folks. Yeah, I think I remember seeing who was our other super heavyweight lady? Who went to London?
Holly Mangold.
Holly, the other one. Mm-hmm. Not Holly.
Sarah Robles.
Sarah. Yeah. Well, she was talking about how she was fucking living in poverty as she was completing her preparation to go to the fucking London Games. Like, at least right before, you think there'd be some resource to support her.
Yeah.
You know,
it's a lot of groveling and begging and, you know, scraping change out of the couch. But it's unfortunate. And then, again, you know, CrossFit has done a good job, and inadvertently, I assume, but it has allowed so many coaches now and lifters to make some money at least. And so it allows them to, they still have to work. They still have to earn money. They still can't train as full-time professional lifters like they need to, like the people they're competing against internationally, but it's a step in the right direction. And so we get more exposure. We can actually get some sponsorship and some money.
This is what frustrates me when you see people go, "Oh, I know what we got to do to fix. We just got to get really fucking strong." Like, it was so fucking obvious and simple. I'll just get, look at those guys, how good they always got to get gooder than we are now.
Yeah, it's weird that we never fucking thought of that.
Come on, man. Is that the fine detail you're using in your thought process, is to say the most obvious stupid shit that you think these professional coaches haven't considered a million times a day? Fuck.
It's a little frustrating. Yeah. It's a little frustrating to be second guessed by people who have no exposure to the actual sport. They have no experience. They've never coached a weightlifter. Never even talked to a fucking weightlifter.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of assumptions, and there's a lot of really big, key, important things that go conveniently overlooked. The money situation is one of them. You know, China has a million weightlifters. A million. You don't have to be a
good weightlifter.
Yeah. But here's the thing: you can do whatever you want, and you can get these guys strong, and you can break as many as you happen to break, because you got 10 more in line that are just as good. You have guys in there, you know, I've been told stories by people who've gone and visited some of the training centers. It's a routine thing. On a Tuesday morning, you've got the guys going in there lifting more than the world record clean and jerk. No one's even fucking watching. It's just a routine thing. It happens. And you'll never know that guy's name because they don't need him. The hard part in this country is getting to the Olympics, getting to the world championships. The hard part for those guys in those countries is getting on the team to get there, right? Because there's so many of them. They have the talent. They don't have the pro sports that we have here that are pulling the talent away. You know, you get a kid who's not even that good of a football player. He can go get his college education paid for playing football.
By being okay at
it. Yeah, go
not
play,
even being that
go,
great
go
at
to
it.
A D2 school, get a good education. You know, like, what are you going to say? Like, hey, no, you should be a weightlifter. I can guarantee you a life of poverty and obscurity instead, you know?
Keep talking.
So, yeah.
The only Americans that weightlift are the ones that really love it. They're not trying to get out of anything.
Yeah, but I mean, I've seen a lot of beauty in that, though, because I see a lot of guys who just have really laid it all on, at this altar for the sake of this of the sport. It's really, I don't want to say it's the smartest thing always, but goddamn, you got to appreciate what they're doing.
It
you
got
to try to support them with the best of our ability.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely one of the most appealing things is that it's a small community, but you know that everyone in it is really dedicated. It's not a lot of sports. If there's money in it, you can be in it for the wrong reasons. You could fucking hate playing whatever sport it is, but you're getting paid $10 million a year. You're going to suck it up, you know?
Yeah.
Not that I feel sorry for you. You get to fucking play ball and make millions of dollars. Like, oh, yeah, I feel terrible. But, you know, with weightlifting, it's like you do it because you love it, and you do it whether or not anybody's watching because, you know, you enjoy the process. You take pride in it. And, you know, I like being a part of that and knowing that everybody you interact with is going to be essentially, you know, on that same page.
You got the movie coming out. It's called Weightlifting.
American Weightlifting.
American Weightlifting. Documentary comes out, what's the date, November 16th?
November 16th, yeah.
Okay. And how can people watch that?
They can, the easiest way, go to AmericanWeightliftingFilm.com. That'll have everything. So it'll be available on DVD, it'll be streaming, download, all that stuff. So it'll be very, very easy, easily accessible.
Mark your calendars.
Yeah.
Is there anything in the movie that we should look forward to?
The whole movie.
I didn't intentionally put any cheese there. Is there a twist?
Is there a twist at the end?
You called Amy old, and you called his movie shit.
The twist is that I was Bruce Willis the whole time.
There you go. That's all I wanted
to
hear.
Did you narrate it in a good Batman voice?
I did not narrate it.
Bob Tacano, 19 whatever. Marbell, man, greatness.
I skipped the narration thing. There's like 2 seconds of titling in the beginning, and the rest of it is all interviews. And
sweet.
So
was this your first foray into such a... I mean, that's not a small undertaking, man.
No, it took me 4 years. And
jeez.
It was a terrible mistake. But, you know,
that's what I was looking for.
The hardest part for me about making a movie is that I had no fucking idea how to make a movie. And but the fact was I had this idea, something I wanted to do, and no one else was going to do it. So I figured, well, you know, why not? I'll just make it happen.
Fuck, man, I love that attitude, though.
So
just dove in the pool.
You know, the reality is that, you know, it was made on a shoestring budget because... it's fucking weightlifting in the U.S. Like, yeah. No one's coming in and giving me money. But that was the whole point, right? It stays with the whole theme of the sport is that we have no money. Where it's an independent sport. It's a small group of people. And if we want things to happen, we got to make them happen. So I figured it should be a good example. And
no excuses.
You know, maybe someone will see that and actually have some talent and skill and ability and resources and do something better that gets even more exposure.
I'm gonna purchase it. I'm going to stream it 5 times a day. God damn it. No, I just feel this. Being here is kind of a special thing, man, because I feel this. Amy's right. It's a warm feeling, this place. And it just, every time I have these kind of conversations, it goes, fuck, man. More than anything I could ever do in my pathetic, very average lifting career in another obscure sport that no one really gives a shit about in powerlifting, I go, what makes me really happy is the idea of giving whatever I can give to some kid, give him a shot at doing something like a national caliber meet one day, or maybe making the Olympics. That is a fucking worthwhile thing to pursue.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's really special.
Yep.
Yeah. It is cool standing in here. I've been looking at pictures of this place off your website for years. And it's kind of cool walking in, almost surreal.
It's the fourth wall that no one ever sees over there. That's very true. Yeah.
Well, they
Amy,
now.
Amy's sitting in a field. She did not lift on that grass. Come on. That's not good footing.
Yeah, that's right after she snatched that.
Oh.
Right in the grass.
Sat down, took a break, got a little water.
Sweet.
Photographer walked by.
So it seems that most gyms don't really make any good money off their competitors specifically. It seems there's like a handful of competitors, and that's like the real reason the gym's in operation. And then there's a big group of people who are kind of like the regular fitness people that are actually producing enough money to make it where the competitors can actually train. Is that kind of how it is as well?
Here. Yeah, and it's beyond that. It's not just the fitness people in the gym. It's the entire other side of the business, the books and DVDs, seminars, all that stuff is what finances the weightlifting team. So, yeah, the weightlifting coaching doesn't make me money. It costs me money.
Right.
You know, it costs me.
We told that to somebody one time and she got really mad. I think she thought I was lying to her.
No, that's the reality. And it's not that we don't love all of our clients, but that's, you know, the simple fact is that we could not run a competitive weightlifting team without all those other, you know, streams of income.
Right. You guys have a lot of stuff. You got the performance menu, you got books and DVDs. Like, you want to kind of go through all the stuff you guys have. You got a ton of things available. We actually promoted your your book in a recent episode, maybe two episodes ago.
Top 10 books.
Top 10 books, and your Olympic weightlifting book was, what, the first or second one we told people to read?
I think it was the first, number one.
Yes.
Hey, great resource. What's the number one? Say it now.
Yeah.
That's right.
Just tell them. We'll take your word for it.
I personally have the weightlifting bias, so.
There you go.
I was like, that's your number one training book, because if you're not weightlifting, I don't think you're training.
You're subhuman, so. Is that what you're suggesting?
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay. Yeah, we used one of your DVDs for staff training a while back as well. So go ahead and run through all your stuff, because we use everything you guys have.
Great, yeah.
All right, well, I'll see if I can remember it all. So we do books, publish books. We have two of mine. My first book, which is the big, thick one, Olympic Weightlifting, Complete Guide for Athletes and Coaches. I did Olympic Weightlifting for Sports, which is like a... the whole idea was to make it more like a simple, more accessible thing for people who are not interested in being competitive weightlifters. They don't want all the details. They want, hey, how do I get in here and learn how to snatch,
clean, jerk.
That was
for like the football coach.
Exactly. Yeah. And then
the meathead version.
We've got a couple DVDs out that kind of go with those books, you know, just instructional things. I published Bob Takano's book recently, which is all about, you know, kind of Soviet style programming. It's kind of... You know, Bud Charnigo has translated all these Russian texts.
He's a feisty man.
And which is, it's been a fantastic resource, but they're not super cohesive. Like, it's tough to get good information out of them, because it's basically a collection of articles, and it's, you know, from the 70s primarily. And so Takano's book is like kind of the Americanized version of the Soviet system. So it's very well laid out. It's very clear.
It's pretty awesome.
You have that one?
I actually have it here.
Yeah. But can I borrow it?
We talked about it on the top 10 episode.
Yeah, it did come up.
At the very end, we talked about it.
Yeah. Word.
And we have Matt Foreman's book out, which is kind of the opposite end of the spectrum of Takano's. You know, it's more, you know, anecdotes and funny stories, and Matt's a super funny guy, but, you know, definitely like has training information in him. Yeah.
That's what I do. Blabber on the radio and blabber on fucking print.
A little more philosophical. Yeah, I was looking at that book over there. It reminded me of your book. It's like, it's not like do this program. It's kind of like training philosophy and funny articles.
And you need that, man, because like I always see the three things. There's like the science you need to know. You need to know the physics of this. You need to understand how the mechanics are important and why. You need to know design and how you take that and manipulate it in some sort of strategic way to get an effect. And then there's this third part, which I call sort of the folk knowledge, like the shit you learn during the grind, the relationships, the belief, the frustrations, that all, it closes that third critical gap. And if you don't have that, then the other things don't really make sense. You might as well just be a professor who never trains or coaches or right. You know, what have you. That's the key element. And the humor and the frustration and everything that comes with it is like the closing big thing for me.
Yeah. So well, what was the name of that book again? Bones of Iron.
Bones of Iron.
And that's actually a really good point. You know, we get so many emails and things from people who are like, hey, I want to be a weightlifting coach. You know, what do I do? It's like, well, you got to be a weightlifter. You have to go live that life for a while. You have to be in that environment, because like you said, you could know, you know, what it says in all these books. You can read my book till you're blue in the face. But, you know, if you haven't experienced that environment and that, you know, that atmosphere, it doesn't really mean a whole lot.
So what about the performance menu? What's that all about?
Oh, performance menu, man, we're coming up on year 9 of that thing, which is...
Damn, dude.
That's like the best kept secret on the internet. We've been publishing that thing since I was born, pretty much. So it's a monthly digital journal, comes out in PDF. Now you can send it to your Kindle. You can do all kinds of jiggy shit with it.
You just said jiggy.
Yeah, I was gonna say that was like so. It's like
performancemenu.com, and it's $30 a year. It's dirt cheap for 12 issues a year. Or we have a premium subscription now for $100 a year, which gives you access to all the back issues. So if you're paying attention, that's 9 years of back issues. It's like 550 articles.
Gold mine, man.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, that gives you 50% off in the Catalyst store too.
Do we tell people we got to hit that on the episode we do digital online resources and shit for the show, because we didn't do that yet.
No, we just did books. We'll do like our favorite blogs, favorite blogs. Yeah, we'll do our blogs one day, and we'll do, you know, videos another day.
That's gonna be on the top of the list, dude.
Yeah, I've been getting hit with people like you said books, but is there any websites? So we'll do websites one day. Top 10 websites.
You guys got anything else?
Yes. Well, we've been doing seminars for years, but now we actually have a certification program, which we just launched, you know, a few months ago. So we have a couple different levels, and it's a combination of seminars and testing and all that kind of stuff. So it's all based on my book and the seminars.
Certifiably jiggy, is that the course?
That's level 3. Keys to the spaceship. But yeah, so we've got a level one in Charleston, South Carolina coming up in April. That's going to be our only East Coast one next year. Mm-hmm. And then we'll have a couple more here. So I just don't have the time and the energy anymore to travel. Like, I used to travel all over the place. The last big travel one I did was Copenhagen a couple years ago, and I was just like, I'm fucking done. There's so many weightlifters and coaches out there doing seminars. Mm-hmm. I figured I don't need to fly my ass all over the place.
Get a little saturated maybe. Or
yeah. So I figure that if people really want to learn from me directly, then they can come here and, I can do a better job here. We have the space, we have the equipment. I have a full coaching staff of like 6 people.
Which is own.
And so, people get a better experience here, and I don't have to take years off my life traveling.
Yeah, that's like Amy said, this is your laboratory. Which I fucking love that way of specifically describing a gym. It's really what it is. It's like your space where a unique thing emerges from your interaction with a whole host of individual human beings. Like, you can't reproduce this anywhere else.
You can't. And if I feel like if you're going to be putting out educational material and things like that, it has to be legitimate. You can't be the doctor on, the TV news who hasn't touched a patient in 20 years and is giving out advice.
Dr. Oz. Yeah. Fuck you, Ganja Kuta, whatever you guys, CNN. Fuck you. You don't know weightlifting. I hear weightlifting's bad for backs and knees. Fuck you.
Yeah.
Well, it's bad, but different. Not in the way you're thinking. Shut up, doctor, on TV.
So, if you don't have a place like this, you're not actively coaching, then you probably shouldn't be talking.
Yeah.
Well, I'll shut up.
Yeah. All right, guys. We're going to wrap this up.
Yeah. So again, one more time, what's the date the movie's coming out?
November 16th. And AmericanWeightliftingFilm.com will have all the links.
You'll be able to access it online. You guys are going to do a screening here?
Yeah, there'll be a screening November 16th in Cupertino in the Bay Area. And that's
pretty much sold out.
Yeah, so that's probably going to be a lost cause at the time this airs. But it'll be available on DVD streaming. It'll be worldwide all on that same day. So,
audience, dude, if you want to support this great gym and this great sport, fucking get this. Go buy it. Go support your local wielder. Fucking download, stream,
show it to your friends.
Yeah, please help me redeem the last 4 years of my life.
Yeah, it will not be in vain.
And if people are in the San Jose, San Francisco area, they got to come by Callus Athletics.
Yes, indeed. We're 5 minutes from San Jose, 35 minutes from San Francisco, so it's easily accessible.
Yeah, I know sometimes I get CrossFitters who are like, I want to get better at weightlifting. What should I do? It's like, where do you live? They'll say they live like a half hour away from like a great weightlifting gym or something. Just go there.
Yeah.
Like, there's nothing I'm going to tell you that's going to be better than just going to a good coach.
Go there and start living it. Just do it.
Yeah. Yeah, got to do it. You got to do it in person and live. And it's all the stuff on the internet and books is great. It's a good start. But if you're not actually there doing it and living it, then you're kind of just fucking wasting your time.
Don't fucking waste your time. God, you have a finite life. We can do it. Fucking jerking off on the internet and trying to learn about weightlifting? Get in a gym. That's my last little rant.
All right. We're going to sign off here.
This is an impassioned episode.
Make sure you go to barbellshrug.com, sign up for the newsletter. Follow Amy on Twitter.
Do
you need to be followed anywhere?
No, I try to stay off Twitter as much as possible. Facebook, but I can't take any more friends. I guess there's a 5,000 person limit, so I finally feel like I made it in
life
now.
You're so popular.
I maxed out Facebook. I'm done. I can retire. But yeah, Catalyst Athletics on Facebook, American Weightlifting on Facebook and Twitter. Barbell Shrugged, coupon code. American Weightlifting. Get $5 off that download. So it'll be the first 100 people.
What's the coupon code?
Barbell Shrugged.
Barbell Shrugged is the coupon code.
Easy to remember.
Mm-hmm. Perfect. We will put that out there. Hey, and if you're listening on iTunes and you enjoy this, go give us 5 stars. Leave a comment. Positive ones only. Thanks.
Thanks for coming on the show, Greg.
You bet.